And now for something completely different. This week, we've got a full interview with the Playhouse Creatures creative team, which is now playing at Coho Productions, and a little teaser from Skinner, Kirk, and Body Vox. Next week, you can hear the full interview with Skinner, Kirk, and Body Vox, but I wanted to make sure that everyone knew that Skinner, Kirk show will already be running when you hear the podcast next week. For tickets for Skinner, Kirk Dance Ensemble, go to skinnerkirk.com. And now on to your regularly scheduled programming. Hi, everybody. I'm Susanna Mars, and you're listening to Adventures in Artslandia. Today, I'm going to be talking to Brennan Dwyer, McKenna Tweet, who are both co-producers of Playhouse Creatures by April DeAngelis at Coho Productions. And also joining us is Alana Byington, the director of that project. Playhouse Creatures opens March 17th and runs through April 8th and features Lorraine Barr, Brennan Dwyer, Jacqueline Maddox, Dainichia Noreau, McKenna Tweet, an all-female cast and production team, with the exception of the members of the Coho production staff. So welcome.
Thanks so much for coming.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. Coho is known for co-producing work with artists, and they solicit work from artists in the community. How did you come in contact with Coho?
Well, I guess ultimately that comes down to the complete origin story of how this project came about. Mm-hmm. When I was a mentee with Third Rail in 2013-14, I had the privilege to look at the body of works that they were considering for their next couple of seasons. And among them was Playhouse Creatures. Now, by the time that they produced Or by Liz Duffy Adams, it became apparent that they were probably not going to produce Playhouse Creatures. So around that time, or a little bit before, I brought the script to Brennan, which is about a couple of years ago at this point. And Brennan was just as excited about the script as I was, and we said, hey, why not? Let's just do it. And at that time, Northwest Classical Theater, now Collaborative, mm-hmm. was just turning into a collaborative and a production house. And they had just done Waiting for Godot, or were just about to do it. And so we were actually looking at NWCTC and The Shoebox, really, for this production.
Well, this is kind of an interesting point, and we are kind of assuming that people who are listening know what it's like to decide you're going to do a project.
And
you are basically looking for space, you're trying to find people who can maybe back you up financially, creatively.
Yes.
So you're basically building a small business.
Yes.
And there's also the question of the producing umbrella that you put over it is not insignificant as well, because those companies, established companies in the community, have been doing work for years, sometimes decades, to build a name and an audience for themselves.
Yes.
And so if we really want our project to get done, it's partially because we want people to see it or experience it. Mm-hmm. So we don't want just a trickle of people coming in the door. We want to be able to leverage whatever the existing communities are from that umbrella organization.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's interesting, too, because both you mentioned the Shoebox Theater and mm-hmm. also Coho are in unique places in the city.
Yeah, yes.
With different supportive parking issues, restaurants, places to eat, all those things.
Yeah, and McKenna and I had both been company members at Northwest Classical, so that's why that kind of came up as our first thought of how to do this, how to leverage this kind of producing model. Mm-hmm. And exactly, we just started making a list of, okay, well, we want to do this. What are the steps, one by one, that we need to do this? And one of the first things that we decided was to commit to a bigger entity. And if nothing was going to pan out in terms of that, then we could have talked about going the self-production model.
But writing grants or...
Writing grants or just, who knows? We didn't get that far down the road to
which
where...
Which is really nice.
Yes, it is.
No one wants to get that far down the road.
Yeah.
But you will if you have to, and that's fine. And we were totally prepared for that. Mm-hmm. But around that time when we were sort of figuring out which existing production house might suit us, since it is a text rooted in classical works... Coho sent out a submissions request through PDX backstage, and we said, hey, why the heck not?
Let's give it a shot.
So I think what you said a minute ago, was a good segue, and that is, obviously, you really believe in this piece. It means something to you because you went down this very complicated path. So yeah. What was it that drew you to the piece creatively?
Yeah.
I mean...
Oh, gosh, that's a big question. To sum it up the best way I can is this play for me offers what I like to call a genuinely feminine experience that I don't necessarily get all the time in my platforms of entertainment, whether that be theater, film, television. I hunger for stories that I can relate to. I've wanted to be male characters all my life in film and television, and it sort of dawned on me as an adult woman that I relate to those characters that I find the strongest and the most interesting and the most complicated and have the most fleshed out, well-rounded lives. I tend not to see that a lot for female characters. So for me, that's exactly what I mean by a feminine experience. This is a 5-woman show, and we've added a 6th woman. Her name is Sammy. She is our musician, and she is on stage with us.
What's she playing?
She's playing...
doesn't she play?
Right. The keyboard, recorder, classical guitar, the viola...
Right.
And one
kazoo.
There's another.
And the lion's roar instrument that she created for the show.
Yeah. Oh,
that's lovely. That sounds wonderful. I love that kind of texture.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And has written original music as well.
Mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how did she enter the process? Because I know when you're writing music and arranging, and she doing underscore and sound effects, is she kind of acting like a musical cast member?
Yes, and she is the sound for the show.
Wow.
There's no electronic sound. Well, except from her keyboard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We're not being period... what's the word?
Accurate.
Which reflects the play, because the play has a modern sensibility and it's a period piece. So there is this duality that we've tried to explore in other ways as well.
I like that. I mean, it's fun to have that, the disparity, and then kind of see how one influences the other, and that's nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the play really just spoke to you as a woman, and I'm assuming, of course, that 5 women are as different as women are,
so they run
the gamut.
Yes.
But they're all actresses, is that accurate?
Yes.
And the play is set in the Restoration period,
yeah.
And it's about actresses.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, wow, that's amazing.
And they are all... With one small caveat, they're all based on actual historical women who were really these theatrical pioneers. But their stories and the things that happen to them or the things that they do are fictionalized. So they're either mixed up with other things that may have actually happened in history, or they're just made up out of April's brain. But there's a bedrock of historical truth that underlies the experience, whether or not it's the particulars.
So I'm curious, since it's set in a very particular historical time, does it behoove audience to kind of have a little backstory? I mean, for me personally, as an audience member, I really enjoy having a little bit of any reading material that I think is kind of fun, or anything to Google, or, you know, that would kind of put you there.
The place to start would be actually just on Coho's blog. The dramaturg Jessica Dart has been doing some fantastic research, and she's been posting now a lot of that research as blog entries on the Coho website.
Oh, that's great.
So that's a great primer, and you can kind of read bits and pieces here and there. If you want some popular entertainment, I mean, what you could watch Stage Beauty.
Stage Beauty,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is a movie from, I don't know, a decade ago or so.
It was late 90s,
late
I think.
90s.
Late 90s, early 2000s.
More than a decade.
Time flies. In the Restoration period.
Yeah. But about the same era, but, you know, that's another form of entertainment that you can digest some some more factual information about. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one of the central figures of our show is Nell Gwynn, and she's pretty well known in theatrical circles, and if you are not in a theatrical circle, then just Google Nell Gwynn, and all sorts of stuff will come up about her and her involvement in the theater, but also with the court and with the king, and kind of her origin story, how she rose from the gutter.
So what are some of the historical pieces of the puzzle that fed your two characters? Are there things that you are kind of bedded on that really bedded on? Maybe that's even something. Play. I don't know.
But, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Some bedding. Yeah. There's some bedding. Excellent. Well, it is about women, frantic.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know. You want to go first on that one?
My character, I play Mrs. Marshall in the play, and she's based off of an actress named Rebecca Marshall. She was the younger sister of another actress named Anne Marshall, and together they pioneered a couple of different theatrical styles. Interestingly, one of the first reasons I connected with her is that the older sister, Anne, and then the younger sister, Rebecca, who inherited the role, made the debut of Evadne in The Maid's Tragedy by Fletcher and Beaumont. And that's a role that I played at Northwest Classical Theater Company 2 years ago when Barry Kyle directed there. And so as soon as I learned that, and when we were talking about casting, and Alana said, hey, did you know this little tidbit? That was kind of my first entryway into discovering who these historical people were and what my connection with them was. And then as I learned more about her, it turns out that a lot of the things that she goes through in the play, as I mentioned, are kind of stolen from other actresses' stories. So a lot of it has to do with harassment by nobility who come to the theater, men who get obsessed with a particular actress and pursue her sexually or otherwise, kind of to this obsessive, violent end. And so that's really Mrs. Marshall's storyline. It follows her relationship with an unseen Earl, who just won't leave her alone and won't take no for an answer, and I mean, eventually ruins her life. Well, I won't say anything more. And I should say
ruins it just a little.
I should say within what we know of the story, the limited story that we're telling on stage, because we've also imagined what comes beyond that. So. This is something that didn't happen to Rebecca Marshall, but this sort of pursuit, not only did it happen fairly frequently, there are a couple of incidents that Alana doesn't want me to give away that specifically happened in the play that did actually happen to other actresses quite specifically.
And you told me earlier before we started recording that the play has some relationship with the book The First English Actresses by Elizabeth Howe.
Yes, April DeAngelis actually dedicated the first version of this play to Elizabeth Howe and that book. And I guess it should be said there are two versions of this play, which we had to figure out as opposed to already knowing when we pursued this project. April wrote this, the first version, in 1993, and then it was either 95 or 97 she was commissioned to expand it for the Old Vic, and it became an eight-person version with nine characters, I think, something like that, where she added a couple of male characters as well as another actress.
That's interesting.
And the reason behind that is the Old Vic is a much larger space than what the first script was produced under in 93. But anyway, yes, The First English Actresses by Elizabeth Howe. Apparently, April DeAngelis used a lot of her historical research and references from that book. It is a very interesting read. It really goes into a lot of detail on the specifics of, for example, rape, and how that was not present in a lot of plays and scripts up until women were on stage for the first time. And now that's I hate to say it, but it's a device. It's used to further either the personality or the situation of a female character really to no end. I'm thinking of Game of Thrones, for example.
Happened on Downton Abbey, too.
Downton Abbey. It is everywhere, and up until actresses on stage, you can literally only count maybe two or three instances of rape appearing in the theater before that. So that's something that's very interesting about that book that she goes into a lot of detail with.
So obviously advancing gender equity is a big subject these days, and,
yes,
and you're doing a lot to do that. How has it felt to have an all-female cast and creative team?
Amazing.
What's it like?
It's great. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's been a personal goal of ours from the beginning, not in the sense of to leave anybody else out. Mm-hmm. It's not that we didn't look at male designers, for example, but we wanted to first pursue those who identify as female, just to sort of make a point that they're all out there and they're not all being put to work, and look at the wealth and the talent that lives there. And out of about, I believe, grand total, about 30 or so people working on this project, all the way down to the couple of photographers that we've used and those managing this space, only 5 of those people are male in connection with this project. So I'm personally very happy about that.
How did you come to join the project, Alana?
Well, McKenna and Brennan invited me to talk to them about a project, and by golly, this was it. So I was pleased to be asked to consider directing it.
Right.
And I'm happy that I did.
Yeah. It's interesting because one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, I know, you know, both of you are actresses and you're a director, and I know in City of Portland, to make a living as a creative artist, you have to do a lot of juggling.
Yes.
So I'm wondering how you do it.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm on an extended lunch break from my day job at a civil engineering office right now.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I did cut my shift short at work today to get this done. You know, you just make the compromises where you can.
Well, how do your businesses handle that? Is it a supportive work environment where you are free to tell people what you're doing and how you're doing, and do they come to shows? And
not only that, I should say that my day job, KPFF Consulting Engineers, is actually a sponsor of Playhouse Creatures.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. They are incredibly supportive of me, and they probably wouldn't be if I was a bad employee.
But, or a bad actress.
But that might be the case. But I was very upfront with them when I started working with them as a temp worker and said, you know, this is where my priority lies. I will need to be leaving at odd times for auditions occasionally. Sometimes I will need time off. Sometimes I'll be so exhausted from tech rehearsals that I won't be able to come in the next day. And from the time of my being hired, they agreed to that, and they have never said no.
Wow.
To, I mean, it's kind of an ideal, I should rephrase that, for needing to have a day job to supplement my income, mm-hmm. It is an ideal situation. I dream of a time when I will be able to support myself through other artistic means or production means or something else in the arts world. But while I'm at where I'm at, it's a pretty good arrangement.
Yeah, I really am finding myself trying to see how that works in the world where there are businesses that are not only, I mean, you're so fortunate to have a company that's not only supporting you by, you know, giving you the time you need to do what you want to do,
yeah,
but to actually sponsor the show. That's huge.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of potential for that. And I'm a total believer in the artistic process informing any workplace.
Oh, yeah.
And so I, you know,
I think, more businesses don't really look at it from this angle, but the fact is you can get a really smart person to do a relatively low-level job if their passion is something else, and if you just give them a little leeway, you've got someone doing something that they are going to be very good at doing,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want to move up. You're not going to necessarily lose them to promotion because their priorities are in place. Mm-hmm. And I know that when businesses discover this, and I think it happens more on the East Coast, that there are businesses who say, hey, we can get some really capable people that aren't going to want to find the next thing.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, taking it a step further in my dreamland is that is when people are in communication and sharing their passion and actually assisting each other in having the life that they want. And I think that's
right.
So
if people
amazing.
Can, mm-hmm. if people can come into the office or whatever the work environment is mm-hmm. on a Monday and gab about what they did on the weekend in terms of, you know, I watched this sports game or I watched blah, blah, blah. In my office, it's been really interesting. There's actually another actress who also works in my office.
Oh, my God.
And it's interesting to start infusing those conversations with, well, I was at rehearsal and I was working on my web series. And mm-hmm. You see the actual cultural mindset of those people start to shift to include arts in their personal lives. You know, when my colleague, who's also an actress, as I said, when we invite people to our shows, when we first started doing that, I started working there 5 to 6 years ago, people were pretty skeptical of that, you know, and now every time I do a show, I get a handful of coworkers who come to see the show. I think there's a benefit, of course there's the business benefit that Alana mentioned, but I think there's a cultural benefit to Portland as a developing cultural hub to invest in that sort of exchange within the infrastructure of a workplace.
Oh yeah,
yes.
I could not agree more. I absolutely agree with that. And I wonder, I'd be curious to ask some men about that.
Yeah.
Feel that maybe it might not be as warmly considered, but I could be completely wrong.
I wonder.
Yeah. I personally haven't had as great of an experience with juggling my day job or living wage as Brennan has. I've bounced around between a few companies over the last couple of years in Portland, and very recently had to step back from my full-time position with benefits for myself and my husband so I could accommodate my schedule in the theater as well as accommodate the schedule of the retail environment that I work with. Mm-hmm. And that has not only been disappointing for myself and for the company, but I felt like I let myself down as well, because I completely agree with Alana. I'm a smart person. I will come to a job with somewhat of a lower task level and put my all into it because it helps facilitate my outside life. And if both of them are working together, then wonderful, more's the better. But I can also understand from a business standpoint, particularly in retail that doesn't have a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday structure, I can definitely understand how meeting those needs of those particular employees is difficult. And for my situation personally, I'm back down to part-time hours and I've lost those benefits, which has been devastating, especially with the current state of our universal healthcare and in the flux that it is in. Healthcare is a big issue. So with that being said, I am extremely grateful to my employer for listening to me. They have always sat down with me and heard my concerns. Whether or not they can always accommodate them, whether or not my schedule can always fit into their business model, they have always at least heard what I've had to say.
That's very generous,
yes.
The way you put it. It really is. You know, I think, as we said earlier, it would just benefit everybody all the way around to go that extra, I'd say it's not even a mile.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
Really like a quarter of a mile.
It's your own community, for heaven's sakes,
right,
you know?
That gets to the point, you know, I think especially in these political times, community is key.
Yes.
And keeping in, to my mind, having artists in the world in this way is something so beneficial. And you're at Coho, so you're in Northwest.
Yeah.
What's it like to work in that area? Do you get a lot of community support from the Northwest area or businesses? Do you see people coming in and
Well, we have only been there this week because we rehearsed elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a lively part of town. There's no question. And that
lots
is also...
Lots
of
places to eat.
Yeah, it's growing.
So few places to park.
Right.
Yes. And you have to pay for parking there now, which
really
was a new...
Yes.
Yeah, it's a new thing. I understand why, but it was a surprise.
Yes.
But yes, Coho has a lot of existing connections with their immediate neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We have... several paintings, for example, on loan from the gallery just a few doors down.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
great.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And also, I think the wine bar across the street, the Muse Wine Bar, always runs an ad in their program. You know, that there are these businesses that are immediately around Coho that are really supportive of them. I can only imagine, also, they've said that they got a grant to do their... The new sign at Coho.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And so it sticks out from the building now. It's not flush with the building. And the administrators there were saying that the number of walk-ups has increased so much.
Yeah.
Because the number of people living in that neighborhood and making a night out right around their homes has increased so much that people are walking in and saying, I didn't know there was a theater here, even though they've been in that space for
23rd and Raleigh. Yeah,
completely wrong. 23rd and Raleigh. I'll say it one more time. So you're opening on the 17th.
Yeah.
So that's soon.
Yes.
How's it going?
I'll let you take that one.
Yeah.
It's going very well. You know, I think doing any play is exhilaration and devastation and everything in between, and will it ever come together? But it's a mystery, as they say. Mm. But it's magic happens. It comes together, and
so
that's, I feel pretty good about it.
When people are listening, it'll be the Monday after you open.
Mm-hmm.
So the show runs Thursday through Sunday.
Yes.
Correct.
With a double on Sunday or a matinee?
Just a matinee at 2 p.m. on Sundays.
Great.
Yeah.
And you run through?
April 8th.
April 8th.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
And I do have to say our production crew and our design team are just rock stars. We have come up against some of the biggest challenges I think I've personally ever come across in our tech week this week. Not that they were outside of the realm of completion, but we ran against some challenges this week, and every single person stepped up, and I think we're going to have a better play for it. Which really just, I'm getting actually a little emotional thinking about it. It's been almost a 2-year process for Brendan and I at this point. So.
Right, as we were talking, it just kind of left me that you're also producing.
Yeah.
So that's a big, dense experience.
Yeah, and talk about rock stars.
Mm.
You can't go wrong letting these two women produce a play at your theater, because
they're on it.
They got the two hats, and they're both really nice hats.
Will you do it again, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you feel
absolutely.
After this experience, you feel like, okay, we've got this.
There's something really empowering about taking charge of the content that you're producing, especially for yourself and for the community that you really care about.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, being really interested in art about identity, about gender identity or gender equity, and similarly with racial identity and racial equity, that these issues have art pieces available, being written, being created, that need a champion. And those are I was thinking on the way here, actually, that for me it has to be something that I am in my bones passionate and urgent about, because it takes so much out of you to do it all, that I absolutely will for that right project.
Yes.
Mm, well, especially now in this political climate, it's even more important for us to
absolutely
to mm-hmm. find projects that move us and that we want to put our heart and soul into.
Certainly, yeah.
So there's a little something that we started talking about, and Alana Beth, can you elaborate on the secret lives of some of these actresses and what you dove into in that regard in the show?
The play itself deals with the many things these first actresses allowed on stage, the things they gained and the things that stayed the same and the things they had to do. some of them not so pleasant and so forth.
What are the not pleasant things?
Well, they were still catering to men's desires to get things they wanted. It was a big part of how they maintained. They used to let the men into the dressing rooms, and they'd pay to watch them dress, mm-hmm. and so forth. And Brennan talks about the Earl of Oxford, and her character thinks she's using him, but is she? Of course, I don't want to say more about that. But one of the things we talked about in rehearsal that I found helped enrich our exploration was, what else could these characters hide that there was not even a possibility of testing the waters? And that would have to do with a woman attracted to another woman, mm-hmm. or any other kind of secret that was considered so outrageous and so unacceptable and so irreligious, mm-hmm. that they could never reveal it. And there is a hint that maybe one of the characters has an interest in another woman, or really wants to explore that sense of feeling like a man and having a man's rights. Mm-hmm. And then what else? What else would there be hiding? And each character was asked to think about that. Mm-hmm. And it gives an extra level of an extra layer of how does what they're hiding affect how they approach their others in the world?
Well, it's interesting too, because actors at that time were probably just a couple steps up from thieves, you know. I mean,
they're whores. I mean, they were considered courtesans.
So they're on the edge anyway. They're on the outs. Mm-hmm. And so any wrong move could get you into a lot of trouble. I mean, you're already in trouble if you're an actor.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard to be seen as respectable. And in fact, the characters are in this play are named Mrs. Farley, Mrs. Betterton, Mrs. Marshall, and only one of them is actually married. Mm-hmm. The others adopt the Mrs. title, mm-hmm. in order to appear both unavailable and more respectable than what the assumptions that are placed upon them about their either their profession or their general class,
mm-hmm. their status, or that they're unmarried women. I mean, at the time of the Restoration, and particularly Elizabethan England as well, you weren't considered a fully formed woman until you bore a child. That was your sole purpose in society and your sole contribution to society. So with adding the misses, it helps just a little bit, or it helped these actresses just a little bit to get that kind of credibility that, though, yes, they were on the fringes, but that misses helped get them in there just a little bit more to be more palatable to
or
the male
did
audience.
It. Or
did
it?
You'll
have to come see the play to find out.
There we go. We've got the whole
And what's the obsession with oranges?
Thank you so much for coming. I'm really looking forward to seeing Playhouse Creatures. I already have my tickets.
Ooh, great.
I bought them a month ago, I think.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. And don't miss Playhouse Creatures, which is going to be at the Coho Theater, running March 17th through April 8th. And you can go to www.cohoproductions.org and find out all the information about tickets and look at the blog and learn something and have some fun and go out to dinner and live it up. Thanks for listening to Adventures in Artslandia.
And here's a little peek into next week's podcast with Skinner Kirk and Body Vox. Jamie Hampton, Ashley Rowland, Daniel Kirk, and Eric Skinner.
That'll help voice, equalize the
voice crying out from the wilderness.
Do that in the bedroom, even.
Wow.
Ash.
Like,
well, that's a perfect entree into the podcast today.
Bedroom talk.
Closer, honey.
It's his onstage voice.
No,
Ash.
Not there.
Failing the cover, Ash.
No, because, I mean, really, the four of you, I really wanted to interview you during Valentine's Day, and the timing didn't work out. Mostly
snow happened.
Snow, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah.
And mostly because I think it's so interesting. I mean, I met Eric first working at Portland Center Stage a million years ago.
Or Bat Boy.
Yeah, Bat Boy with Wade. Mm-hmm. Great, wonderful experience. And then, of course, as you know, I got to know you better. I began to know you as a choreographer, dancer, and your work at Body Box. And then I met Daniel, and then I learned more about Body Box. And then I read up, and I thought, wow, Body Box is 20 years old. And Skinner Kirk is 19 years old. I mean, you guys are almost the same age. And I thought, well, it's really fascinating that I know you are very close friends and you're married. And are you guys married?
I'm married.
Domestically them. Partnered.
Domestically partnered. Mm-hmm. Excellent. You know, and I thought...
Not a tax deduction category, but...
Officially.
Nonetheless, they tied the knot.
You know, I'm really fascinated by how... You creatively, I mean, you're obviously dear friends. You have a shorthand, you know, emotionally. And I wonder how that is for you. I mean, you as a married couple, you as a domestically partnered couple, you know, how, I mean, I know for me, when I, because I'm a resident artist at Artist Repertory Theater, there are people I am in contact with by virtue of being here in the building that I am with, and things spark my work, and I get excited about, and that must just be, you're at home. I mean, how your life is your work and same, right?
Find the answers to these intriguing questions next week on Adventures in Artslandia. Thanks for listening.